The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
And welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today. So I want you to think about this honestly. You know, have you ever called into sick and you really weren't sick? How do you feel, you know, when Friday hits and, you know, you've got the weekend ahead of you? You know, what's your mood like? Hey, thank God it's Friday. And also, okay, now it's kind of swing into Saturday night, Sunday morning. Well, how are you feeling by, say, midday Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening? Do you start to feel a little bit depressed? Do you start thinking twice about, hey, you know, that I do have a little bit of a tickle in my throat. You know, maybe I ought to not go into work tomorrow and spread my germs. And oh, by the way, what would you guess is the most popular day for people to call in sick? No brainer, right? Yeah, Monday. According to all the research that looked at, a Monday is the most popular day for people to call in sick. Now, I'm not saying people aren't really sick, but come on, there's got to be a little bit of a connection here, perhaps. And actually, the second. This was a little bit of a surprise, but then when I read some of the rationale for this, but the second biggest day for people to call in sick is Friday. And some of the experts say, well, the way they would explain that is Friday, it's more that people want to extend their weekend because most people actually don't mind going to work on Fridays because you're kind of swinging into the weekend. Mondays, though, usually, according to one expert, they say that the reason why people call in on a Monday is because they hate their job. You know, is that you, possibly? Or maybe you don't hate your job, but you're not feeling, you know, invigorated by it. You're not passionate about your job. Well, you got to listen in because I've got a fantastic guest today who has co-authored a book called Make Your Job a Calling, How the Psychology of Vocation, not Vacation, check me on that, How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work. I'm pleased to introduce to the show Brian Dick. He is, his co-author is Ryan Duffy. We're going to be speaking with Brian today. A little background on Brian. He's an associate professor of psychology at Colorado State University and co-founder and chief science officer of Career Analytics Network Jobsology. I think I got that right, but we'll check with Brian. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Scott.
So you caught the introduction. So what do you think? Is there some truth to that? Do you think the reason why people call in sick mostly on Mondays is maybe they're not too keen on their job?
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. People call in sick because they're sick, but what makes them sick?
Right.
You know, for many people, it's the thought of their work being a drudgery and having to face the day and a lot of pressure waiting for them when they get there. And so, you know, it's sometimes a lot easier to just dial in and say, I can't handle it right now.
Now, believe it or not, this was my first job, and this was my boss. I remember he would tell me privately, say, Scott, I just want to give you a heads up. I'm taking a sick day tomorrow. And I said, oh, you already know you're going to be sick. He said, this is a mental health. So in his mind, that was justified because it's a mental health day, of course. And it fell under the caption of, a sick day. So, this is an excellent book, where you talk about you know, making your job a calling, and you use the word specifically, you know, vocation, which is usually associated with, well, you know, maybe religious life or nonprofits and things like that. But this is mainstream. You're actually mainstreaming this idea of making your work a vocation, making your job a calling. How do you get, you know, is that a stretch or, you know, what are you thinking here?
Well, I think I wouldn't consider myself or Ryan Duffy as mainstreaming the concept because we believe it's already mainstream. Some of this started for me when I was a graduate student doing career counseling at the vocational assessment clinic at the University of Minnesota, and we'd have middle career adults coming in, people who were objectively very successful. They had a great salary, good benefits, were kind of moving up the corporate ladder, but they could hardly get out of bed in the morning because they hated what they did so much. And a lot of them would talk about how they just longed for a sense of meaning from their work. And often they'd use the word calling. And, you know, if you kind of look around, you walk through bookstores and see what's on the shelves in the career section, you'll see that this concept of calling resonates with people. It's something that speaks to wanting to get more out of their job than it just being a means to a paycheck. They want it to count, to matter in more of a, I don't want to get too philosophical, but people want their work to matter in an existential sense. They want it to be a way that they can make some kind of contribution and leave some kind of legacy beyond what they're investing in their communities and churches and families.
It's interesting you say that. I run into people, I mean, I've been in the workplace now for over 30 years, and I run into people now that they're just starting to think about this now that, and pretty much the rationale is, look, I did what I had to do. I had to support my family, didn't love my job, didn't really like it, but, you know, I felt it as a duty, as an obligation, a responsibility. Now I'm going to do, and I'm thinking of a particular gentleman with, you know, one of the largest financial services firm in the world who was just so happy to finally reach retirement at a fairly young age. I'm talking about mid-50s, and said, yeah. Now I want to pursue, I don't know if he referred to it specifically as his calling, but he said, I want to do what I want to do and for the right reason. But why wait, right? And maybe that's part of what you're getting at.
Yeah, and that, you know, what you described is pretty common. Yeah. People are driven to be successful, to achieve, to make a mark, you know, to support their families and all of that. And when they feel that they're at a point where they have flexibility to do other things, they think, okay, maybe I don't love what I've been doing all these years. I want to try something different. But, you know, I work at a university. I talk with students every day. And many of them also are thinking, yeah, I mean, there are obligations. You have to support yourself. And if you want a family, you have to earn a living wage to be able to support them. But while you're doing that, why not do it in such a way that you're also using your gifts to make a meaningful difference in the world around you?
Do you think that as you mentioned that you believe, you and your co-author believe, that it is mainstreamed, it seems to me that it's a relatively new concept. I'm thinking back to a meeting that I had with the former CEO of Hearst Magazines, Bob Danzig, and this goes. This was a few years ago. He had he newly retired as the CEO, and I was really intrigued by this whole idea of, you know, your life calling and really doing what you love to do, follow your passion, et cetera. And I asked him about that, and he just kind of laughed. As I recall, Bob was orphaned at a young age. And long story short, you know, he climbed the ladder, became the CEO. Hearst Magazines, of course, very well known. He actually interviewed at the Hearst Castle, which is now a tourist attraction. And I think it's San Simeon down in over in California. So anyway, he kind of chuckled. He said, are you kidding? You know, meaning a calling. He said, I was just trying to pay my bills. You know, so I think there was that, you know, when I think about my parents and grandparents, I mean, come on. No, how can, you know, farming or getting up at 4 a.m. to take care of the cows, the chickens, whatever, how can that be, you know, considered a calling. So is, you know, in that respect, do you think this is a new concept?
I do. I think it's made a resurgence. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, we could trace the notion that work can be a calling all the way back to ancient Greece, of course, as we tend to do whenever we talk about the history of ideas. But the Greeks kind of had a separation of sacred and secular. For them, it was the life of the mind and the Greek equivalent of navel gazing and philosophizing that really counted in life. And work was just the burden of the beast. You know, it was what made us like animals. And that idea really took hold and was kind of entrenched, you know, in the Middle Ages. The church kind of got on that idea, and for them, the kind of work that had real meaning and significance was church work. It was priesthood, becoming a monk or a nun. And then around the Protestant Reformation, that kind of shifted, and people like Martin Luther said, no, any kind of work could have spiritual significance as long as it's done to the glory of God and to help our fellow person. And then, you know, that idea started to take hold. The Puritans ran with it and wrote all kinds of really rich things about the role of work in human life that had that basic notion that any kind of honest area of work, you know, something that was morally legitimate, not evil, so not mm-hmm. drug dealing and pimping or whatever, but any kind of honest area of work could have meaning and significance if approached in the right way. And, you know, sometime around, I don't know, maybe it was the late 90s with the advent of positive psychology, the idea that it's not just about kind of helping sick people get well, but it's about helping people flourish. People started to pay attention to, okay, what does it mean to flourish? And as it applies to work, what does it mean to flourish in my job? Now, it probably means more than just making a high salary and getting lots of promotions. It probably means, has something to do with well-being, and not just happiness and pleasure, but meaning and purpose. And that's where this concept of calling, I think, really started to take hold. And you know, Monster.com, the website that connects job seekers to employers, had as its tagline, "Your calling is calling." Oprah devoted an issue of her magazine to it. And so it seemed to be something that entered into public consciousness again as something worth striving for.
I like what you say, especially because I'm sure there's a lot of people that have mundane, you know, types of work, drudgery, or some people might see it as drudgery. But it does remind me of when you, and I'm glad also to hear that you're saying it's not necessarily about happiness. Naturally, you want to feel good in your job. You want to be happy. But it does remind me of a time many years ago when I was in Atlanta having breakfast. I believe the name of the joint was the OK Corral, a really popular breakfast joint. And I'm watching, you know, as our waitress is just harried. I mean, the place was packed. It's like one of these, it's a breakfast place where like all the power brokers in Atlanta kind of gather. And it's just very busy, very loud. And I'm watching her and just how she's handling herself. Very, very polite, very courteous, very prompt. And she had this, you know, she would take our order on this little clipboard. And finally, at the end, I said, you know, I've been watching how you've been doing your job. And I really admire the way you've been handling it. You handle the stress. You're very polite. And so I asked her a little bit about that. And she said, well, you know what? I've got to be because I'm a single mother and I've got to do a good job here because I'm supporting my children. And then she lifted up the clipboard and there were pictures of her kids there.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And so, yeah, it was beautiful. And I thought, son of a gun. So she was able to attach, the meaning to what many people would just say, oh, you know, I've got these really cranky customers, demanding, et cetera, impolite, and all of that. No, she didn't see it that way. And she said, this reminds me as to the why I'm doing this. Why do I get up in the morning? Why am I polite? This is my why. And in your book, you talk about, you know, what work means and the difference that it makes. So, So how do we make that connection between, you know, the work that we do and meaning? Because I could see it on two levels. One is for those people that are in a job, they may view it as drudgery. You know, is there a way to try, for them to try to find meaning? But on the other hand, there may be some people that maybe it is time for them to kind of move on and find something that is more meaningful. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. Well, there's kind of two parts to it. You know, in one sense, this is kind of a career choice issue. You know, and like I said, I deal with students all the time, but people change careers very regularly in today's world. And so that question of, you know, what kind of job should I pursue is one place where this question comes up. And there the question is, for me anyway, it's, you know, what are your gifts and what do you have to contribute to the world and how can you find opportunities that allow you to connect what makes you unique to challenges that you can address that make the world a better place. So that's one approach. But the other is, you know, for people who are in a job that maybe they wouldn't have chosen, how can they derive more meaning from it? And, you know, I think it's helpful to take a step back often and to say, okay, you know, what exactly is what I'm doing about at the end of the day? You know, I mean, our whole culture is set up in such a way that in order for us to survive collectively and individually, you know, we have a lot of needs that need to be met, and we can't meet all of them ourselves. So, you know, take something like garbage collecting. You know, what would happen if waste management just quit for a month? You know, we are used to carrying our garbage out and throwing it down the chute or wheeling it in the Herbie Kirby to the end of the driveway. And then it gets picked up, and we never think about it.
Right.
Well, you know, there are serious public health implications of that job, that function.
Well, so New Yorkers experienced what would happen using that example a few years back, where the garbage just piled up. And I remember seeing that, and just I think we take for granted. My gosh, we're talking about 3-4 days in the way that all piled up. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, if that's you on the truck and you're disposing of garbage, this is not a high prestige job. You know, it may not necessarily be something that people are impressed by when they ask what you do and you say, I'm a garbage collector. But boy, what a critical function that you play in helping your community thrive and helping people stay healthy, do what they need to do, keeping property values up and having things aesthetically pleasing and all of that stuff. You know, one of the principles we lay out in the book then is, what would it look like if you just spent a little bit of time reflecting on that, you know, kind of the end, the point of what you're doing, the function that it plays in the world around you. If you focus on that and think about that, it may give you an extra boost. It may instill you with a sense of pride. And more importantly, it may give you this sense of meaning and purpose, like, wow, what I am doing really does matter.
We're coming up to a break, and when we come back, I would love, Brian, your thoughts on, so how do people find their calling? You know, what are the dimensions of calling? Because I think many people today really do buy into this. So, you know, you gave an excellent history on that, which I completely agree with through my own personal and direct experience. I think what people are looking for is, okay, I get it. I buy into that. Now, what's next? And I think the idea of how do we know, I use a word, discern, how do we discern or come to understand what our calling is. So definitely want to dive deeply into that right after we take this break. We're speaking with Brian Dick. He is the co-author of Make Your Job a Calling, How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from the Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
We all love our best friend, especially when that best friend is a canine best friend. Now there's a show just for the dogs, or the people who love them. Tune in to Dogs Rock Radio with host Pamela Hill. With your stories and advice from the experts, we'll show just how much love and purpose dogs bring to our lives and others around us. You'll also learn about canine fitness, training, and health and wellness. Make Dogs Rock Radio a weekly stop every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're here speaking with Brian Dick. He is the author, co-author of Make Your Job a Calling. We've been talking about, you know, there's just so many people that, you know, they get up, they go to work, they go through the motions, and they do it out of a sense of responsibility, obligation. Some people do love their jobs. And by the way, I don't necessarily think that loving your job is the same thing as, you know, you found your calling. Although if you do love your job, I think it's fantastic. It's great. I do find, though, that most people that I come in contact with, you know, don't have that that love or that passion for their work. I'm actually going to take a minute before we get back to our guest. I'm going to read a couple of excerpts by Khalil Gibran. He's authored many books, a philosopher going back 19th, 20th century, early 20th century. And this comes from his book called The Prophet. And it was about work. And I'm quoting right now. Bear with me. There's three excerpts. "You work that you may keep pace with the earth and the soul of the earth. For to be idle is to become a stranger unto the seasons and to step out of life's procession that marches in majesty and proud submission towards the infinite. When you work, you are a flute through whose heart the whispering of the hours turn to music. Which of you would be a reed, dumb and silent, when all else sings together in unison? Always you have been told that work is a curse and labor a misfortune. But I say to you, when you work, you fulfill a part of earth's furthest dream, assigned to you when that dream was born. And in keeping yourself with labor, you are in truth loving life. And to love life through labor is to be intimate with life's inmost secret. And what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even as if your beloved were to wear that cloth. It is to build a house with affection, even as if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, even as if your beloved were to eat the fruit. It is to charge all things you fashion with a breath of your own spirit and to know that all the blessed dead are standing about you and watching. And finally, work is love made visible. And if you cannot work with love but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of those who work with joy. For if you bake bread with indifference, you bake a bitter bread that feeds but half man's hunger. And if you grudge the crushing of the grapes, your grudge distills a poison in the wine. And if you sing, though as angels, and love not the singing, you muffle man's ears to the voices of the day and the voices of the night. Gibran had that right, at least in my opinion. Brian, how do we find our calling? How do we love what we do? How do we love and find, you know, meaning in what we do?
Yeah, it's a great question and an important one, and it's a question that people really struggle with, I think. I've talked with a lot of people who long for a kind of Moses in the desert kind of experience, a burning bush, an audible voice saying, here's the path you should take, which I think speaks to a desire to kind of have it laid out without having to, you know, make a choice and fear that you've made the wrong one. You know, it's interesting. I have talked with a couple of people who have had an experience like that. I mean, a literal audible voice. And those are very powerful experiences for people who have them, but they're also pretty rare, and they're probably experiences that most of us shouldn't expect or count on. So I think a good starting point for people is to pay attention to how they're unique. I get a lot of mileage out of this concept of gifts. We're not all the same because of what we've inherited and because of our experiences. All of us are really good at some things and not as good at other things. And so part of discerning a calling means identifying opportunities that allow us to do what comes naturally to us and to satisfy the things that interest us most. And so, you know, one really concrete and basic way to explore this is to take some assessments. And so, you know, I know people have mixed feelings about assessments, but in my field, vocational psychology, it's a really important and reliable and valid way to get good information that can inform the decisions people make about their careers. In fact, you know, you mentioned my involvement in Career Analytics Network, which is a company that's created an assessment portal called Jobsology. And to me, this is an expression of, you know, a way to help people identify their callings. Log on, take some assessments of interests and values and personality and workplace preferences, get some feedback that help you understand yourself better, and then even explore occupations based on how well they fit with these aspects of your work personality, these things that make you unique. So that's one thing. I mean, it's kind of intuitive, but it's a process that many, many people just never really go through in any kind of systematic way, right? A lot of people just kind of fall into what they're doing because of opportunities and people they know. But one starting point, I think, for discerning a calling is focusing on gifts.
And I like that. You also talk about listening, you know, listening to what and for what.
That's right. So, you know, when we talk about a calling, the way the word has been used historically, what it means literally implies that there's a caller. And so for a lot of people, a caller is God. But for other people, it might be something like a social need or a family legacy. The idea is there's something beyond the self that's sort of compelling you and pulling you into a career path. But the discernment process is trying to figure out what that voice is saying, right? And so paying attention to gifts is one way. You know, another really simple exercise that people can do is think about their goals right now. You know, a lot of us are goal-driven and motivated by goals, but a lot of people never really articulate them. And
that's so right.
One of the very simple exercises that I do with people is say, okay, sit down, take out two sheets of paper. On one sheet of paper, write down five goals that you are pursuing in your life right now. You know, what do you want to get out of life? What kinds of things matter to you? What are you pursuing? And then on the other sheet of paper, I say, now do the same thing, but think about it in terms of your career. What are the top five career goals that you are chasing after right now, that you're striving to achieve or obtain? And then I have people write down each of those five things, and then it's on two sheets of paper. So I say, look at these things side by side. How well do they align? And do you like your answer to that question about how well do they align? Because if they don't align well, you probably sense that. You may feel that your life is broken into compartments, and work is not really doesn't really fit in with what really matters to you in life, and you may feel kind of disjointed. So, you know, the idea of approaching work as a calling means doing work in a way that fits within the fabric of your life, you know, a broader sense of purpose. So if you don't like your answer to that question, do your life goals and career goals align, what kinds of changes do you need to make in order to bring those things more in sync? That is very, very simple, but a very powerful way to get at these kinds of questions.
I've never really thought about it that way, but I think that people do tend to compartmentalize. I've got my life goals over here, my work goals over on this side. And so you didn't use this word, but in my mind, I think of congruency. I think congruency, the kind of the tighter the fit between, or alignment, let's say, between, you know, our life goals and our work goals, you know, that's certainly a good starting point. I would imagine that when people do that, it can be extremely eye-opening. So it's a kind of a short but very effective kind of an exercise. And you're saying that there is you have an assessment. What is the URL for that?
Listeners can go to jobsology.com.
Just Google.
jobzology.com.
Okay, jobzology, jobsology.com. Check it out. So, okay, now you also talk, when you talk about, your gifts, taking stock, you know, some people, they say, well, I don't really know what my gifts are. I think some people do. Other people, they don't really know. So how do you figure that one out?
Well, you know, you can pay attention to, or you can identify gifts based on your experiences. So, you know, another exercise I've done with people is what we call the you at your best exercise. So you take a step back and you imagine a time recently, hopefully a recent time, that where you just felt like everything was clicking, like you were at your best. Maybe it especially works if this was an experience at work where, you know, you were just sort of in the zone. You were having a flow experience. You were just totally absorbed in what you're doing. You were doing a very high quality job, and people were noticing it. You know, if you take a step back and you look at that experience, then the question is, you know, what kinds of strengths were you displaying in that moment? Mm-hmm. And maybe you're a very creative person, and so you were taking things that, you know, don't always go well together, and you put them together in a way that created beauty and value, like you're an interior decorator or a chef or something like that. Or maybe you were in a sales meeting and you were trying to articulate the message that you wanted to get across in a way that the client or the customer could really understand, and you had this aha moment, and you know, you told a story that really resonated, and that got people really excited about what you were trying to provide them with. I mean, those are examples. The question then is, what was happening in that moment? You know, what specific strengths were you displaying? You know, when you're able to articulate that, then the question is, how can I get more of that? How can I find more opportunities to be at my best, to do things that are really in my wheelhouse, that align with my strengths?
What would you say to the person that would say, okay, you know, Brian, I get it. I understand that. I don't think I can find any more of that in my current job. But to make a move, you know, I've got responsibilities, expenses, putting kids through college or my mortgage. And if I make a change now to do more of that, I mean, financially, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
The job market's tight, et cetera. You've heard of that all before. So how would you counsel somebody there?
Well, I would ask a few more questions to test the assumption that it's impossible to change jobs, because You know, right now in the U.S., most people, by the time they're in their mid-40s, have had 11 different jobs. About every 4 years, people change jobs and often career paths. It's increasingly common. And so I would say, well, let's think a little bit more about what that might look like, and it might be possible to look at ways to make it happen that are actually doable. But I acknowledge, certainly, there are people who, because of their obligations, because of the pressures that they're under, because of geographic constraints and all of that stuff, they just cannot do it. I mean, they just can't even really consider the thought of changing jobs. There are still things that people who are in that situation can do, and that's where we talk a little bit about job crafting, which is this idea that, you know, we have, you know, we're not passive recipients of our work experiences. Most of us have more latitude than we realize to be an active shaper of our work. And so, you know, each of us has a list of job responsibilities, duties that we're paid to carry out that we can't really mess with. But within that, there may be latitude to, you know, add tasks that are more enjoyable, to build relationships that help us get more out of what we experience at work, and even to think differently about the very purpose of what it is that we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, when people are able to do those things, change the tasks, focus on the relationships, and even kind of cognitively change the way they think about their job, then there's good evidence in research that they're able to get more out of it, experience a stronger sense of meaning and purpose.
Now, you mentioned something, and I don't want it to get lost for our listeners. I think it's really powerful. I do agree that, you know, some people are bound by certain circumstances, but I also think that sometimes people just automatically will dismiss the idea of making a change, and it makes me think of a person years ago, you know, new mother, had a full-time job, put the baby in daycare, and was just miserable. The baby was miserable. The mom was miserable. And I remember having a conversation saying, well, you know, you really want to stay at home. Why don't you do it? Well, can't afford it. And so the knee jerk was can't afford it. Okay, I get that. But when we really got down and dug in, you know, how much for daycare? How much are you earning? How about taxes? How about this? How about that? And you know, Brian, it came down to a very, very little difference. They ended up leaving their job, and they made. And I said, also, you know, have you analyzed your spending habits? You know, long story short, she quit her job and became a stay-at-home mother, and you know, financially didn't skip a beat, but never really, you know, really thought about, you know, the possibilities. But I think sometimes when you really do take a good analytical look at things, use more of the mind than the heart, let's say, in this case, then you might find that, you know, things are more possible than you might imagine.
That's right, yeah. You know, the other place where you see that is with unemployment. You know, what you're describing is kind of a voluntary change. But there's evidence that people who are unemployed, now they do struggle. I mean, there's plenty of evidence that it influences, has a big impact on their happiness and sense of purpose and all of that stuff. But there's also evidence that some people who are unemployed look at it as an opportunity that they weren't looking for, but that they have now to take a step back and to ask those kinds of questions. Okay, well, now what do I want to do?
Right.
I kind of have to reinvent myself.
Yeah.
What can I do to make it count the next time around?
Yeah, no, right? I love that. I love that because people then have the time. They, you know, they can think a little bit more about, you know, hey, how can I get it right, you know, the next time around? We're just coming up to a break, but when we come back, you know, you touched on the job crafting, but then I think a lot of people don't realize also how much you can find, you know, meaning and purpose outside of your job, and I think that that's another thing that people ought to consider. And so after the break, would love your thoughts on that. You are listening to The Business of Living. We are speaking with Brian Dick, co-author of Make Your Job a Calling, How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work. And we'll be right back right after these messages.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
All round the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus,
creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
"All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, thank you for returning. And we're going to continue to dig into this whole idea of making your job a calling. We're here speaking with Brian Dick, co-author of Make Your Job a Calling. Actually, you know, in my hands here, I've got a book that it's a fantastic book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl was a survivor of Auschwitz, also a psychologist, and he had this very, very rare gift and ability, let's say, to really not only was he a prisoner in those horrible conditions and a survivor, but also an observer. And Man's Search of Meaning kind of gets into that, not only the experience in the concentration camp, but he also came up with this idea of, I would say it's a type of therapy called logotherapy. And the whole idea is finding meaning in life. And just a quick quote here, he says, "What was really needed was a fundamental change in our attitude toward life." He said, "It didn't matter really what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us." And then finally, he says, "In right action and in right conduct, life ultimately means taking the responsibility to find the right answers to its problems and to fulfill the tasks which it constantly sets for each individual. These tasks and therefore the meaning of life differ from man to man and from moment to moment. Thus, it is impossible to define the meaning of life in a general way." You know, he feels that this is something which I agree with. It's very specific to every individual. So, Brian, before the break, I was teeing up this whole idea of, hey, you know, some people can find their calling in work, but that's not the only way. You can do it outside of work, correct?
That's right. Yeah, if you read theologians on this notion of calling, they talk often about multiple callings and callings even existing on different levels. You know, in vocational psychology, we talk about what we're trying to do is help people live satisfying lives. Now, if you can find immense satisfaction in your work, then great. But many people, for whatever reason, are in situations in their work that don't permit them to experience the kind of meaning and purpose that they want out of life as a whole. And that's okay. Then the challenge is, how do you use other avenues within your life, other life domains, to strive toward that? And a good example here is artists. You know, we have plenty of friends and neighbors in the arts community who do amazing, amazing work and love it and thrive on it. But it's very, very difficult to scratch out a living doing that full time. And so in circumstances like that, you know, we help people identify day job opportunities that aren't necessarily the ideal fit, but that, you know, are a good enough fit for them, but more importantly, give them the kind of flexibility and freedom to carve out some time to spend in the studio so they can pour into what they consider to be their calling while still meeting their obligations and paying the bills.
I understand that, you know, Winston Churchill was famous for the obvious, but also, you know, he was just very prolific, but he was also a fantastic artist specializing in watercolor, and you know, that was kind of his way to relax, his way to do something very, very different and get away from you know, all of the challenges that, you know, that he, Europe, the rest of the world, you know, were facing at the time. But I, you know, I do like that idea of being able to kind of, you know, get something else going. Maybe even, I know some people, by the way, that I'm thinking of one of my clients that they kicked off, while they were full-time in a job, they started a little business on the side, working very late at night, didn't interfere or interrupt with their particular position. There was no conflict of interest. But it turned out that it went from that to now about a $60 million business. So eventually they left the company they were working for. Things really started to click, hired the first employee, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's a $60 million business over about it took about 5 years to get there. And they did not do it for the money. They did it out of an interest, a passion in this particular product. Now there, I have encountered, I'd love your thoughts on this. I have encountered people that find so much meaning. They love so much what they do. It can actually create other kinds of problems because the blinders are on, and they begin to neglect. Neglect other things, whether it be their health, their loved ones, or whatever else. Have you run into that? Have you experienced people come to you with that kind of a situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call that a distortion of a calling. Okay. I mean, it makes sense. You think about it, if something provides a huge amount of meaning and you feel like it's making a difference in the world and that kind of thing, it starts to become really easy to rationalize a kind of overinvestment, you know, unhealthy levels of investment in that domain of life at the expense of other obligations and responsibilities like family, like relationships. And so, you know, one of the things we talk about a little bit in the book is how a sense of calling, the dark side of it may be a vulnerability to workaholism. You know, it just seems so important and you get so much out of it that you end up hurting yourself and potentially other people by investing way too much in it. So that's just one example.
And I think that people that I know that have done that, that really, truly not only love their jobs but saw it as a calling, in later years came to regret that. I mean, even very well-known people, I may have gotten this wrong, but I recall reading something where Billy Graham, so there's your, and I love Billy Graham, but I remember reading something where he said that, in kind of a whimsical way, that, you know, he was so focused on that that maybe he could have been a little bit more focused on, you know, kind of things at home or the home life. So I think that, you know, that certainly would be an extreme example. Now, you also talk about, you know, bring your faith to work. Talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure people are kind of scratching their heads. Are you kidding? And what does that mean? Especially we're dealing with, on a global scale, when we see people that take their religion and faith to an extreme, you know, I can see that that can be a very slippery slope. So what do you mean by that, take your faith to work?
Well, I think people want to live lives that are coherent. You know, they want to feel that what is at the core of their identity is something that matters in every sphere of what they're doing. And so, yeah, I mean, there are clear and egregious examples where taking faith to work means kind of inappropriately proselytizing to people at moments where that's just not appropriate. And then some people will react against that and say, look, we're not going to talk about religion. And politics is another example of this here at all. But that, I think, is going too far in the other direction. I think for people of faith, it's really critically important for them to think through how their faith impacts the work that they do. It provides a very rich sense of context for how they're spending all of their time on the job and can imbue it with a really deep sense of meaning by connecting it with what they view as most important and most meaningful in life. So, you know, part of that might be finding other people who share your faith perspective, who you can engage in conversation on the job or outside of the job. But part of it is also just engaging in reflection about how what you believe in terms of your faith intersects and impacts how you spend all your time. Because, you know, most of us who work full-time spend more of our waking hours working than doing anything else. So wouldn't it be healthy if instead of sealing that off from the rest of life in its own separate compartment, it's something that's integral to your broader sense of purpose and meaning for your life?
I think that people who are deeply committed to their faith, you know, the Sunday thing is, or Sabbath, Sunday, depending on the faith, it isn't enough. Some people take that very seriously. And I have encountered, I do leadership work in various companies, and now I'll never bring that up, but because I do believe it is so important, I think it gives people different perspective when they're dealing with challenging people or challenging situations in the workplace. And I'll listen for certain words. So one example would be when somebody mentioned, you know, I feel very blessed. Well, that's, you know, people don't usually use that word unless there's some kind of a faith underpinning. And then that'll give me a little bit of an opening. And I'll do that because, again, then I would never use that as my entree. But if they leave that little bit of a door open, I'll ask them, so do you have a belief system? You know, can we talk a little bit about that? And it's really refreshing when we can. And then they'll say, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so. They also, we're able to now talk about that. And they do it in a way where, you know, they're not doing it to judge other people. They're not doing it to, kind of hold it over anybody. But I think to get a little bit more meaning out of what can be some challenging, you know, trying, you know, situations in work. We've got just a couple of minutes to go. I'd love your thought on, you know, it does seem to be a Western, this idea of calling or a Christian concept. Are you taking a teaching from one religious tradition and trying to apply it to everyone?
Well, yes and no. It is, the concept does have a very rich history in the Christian tradition. And I've always been upfront about that. I've never apologized for that. It's something that has had a lot of influence in how people think about approaching their work as a calling in the U.S. today. But the other part of it is, it's not like there's a big conflict in how Christians have thought about this concept versus other world religions. In fact, if you look at teachings within Islam, or if you read the Dalai Lama's book, The Art of Happiness at Work, you'll see that a lot of these themes are not controversial at all across different religious traditions and perspectives. You know, this idea that work has dignity and meaning, that we have gifts and that we're called to use those gifts to make the world a better place, that they're not for ourselves, but they're ours to be stewards of, you know, to help us to contribute to the world around us. This notion that all of life can be thought of as sacred. All of these are things that are really shared across world religions. Yeah.
These are universal truths. I like that. Listen, Brian, I really appreciate your time. Folks, make sure you get the book, really, packed with great information, tools. Make Your Job a Calling, How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work by co-author Brian Dick and Ryan Duffy. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And next week, be sure to join us. How to Raise Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. Are you kidding? In the 21st century? Well, we're going to be speaking with Ron Lieber, author of just published The Opposite of Spoiled. Until next week, we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.